Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
Right, hey, Browns River and the Campbell, okay, and I decided to put this thing on and slung it through one of the runs that he talks about in his books, okay, and I'm actually looking at that fly. It's hanging up on my wall right now, the first fish I ever caught on a black GP, and it was out of Hague Browns River. So
that was Art Lindgren sharing a little connection with Roderick Hague Brown. Let's keep this terrain rolling. This is the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today. We'll help you on your fly fishing journey with classic stories covering steelhead fishing, fly tying, and much more.
Hey, how's it going today? Thanks for stopping by the Fly Fishing Show. I've got a great resources page if you want to check out some of the information and books that our guests have noted in this podcast. You can head over to wetflyswing.com/resources to check out all of the books, including, I'll throw one of Art's books. If you think about one, send a DM to me on social and I'll highlight that book. We have Art Lindgren here today to share the history of BC fly fishing with a focus on steelhead. Art connects us to some of the greatest today, including Roderick Hague Brown, Harry Lemire, and Sid Glasso. Before we get started, let's hear from our sponsors. TurtleBox is a new company I've been working with this year. They build an amazing portable speaker that is louder and more rugged than anything I've ever encountered. Unlike most other portable speakers out there, the TurtleBox was specifically built with the sportsman in mind. The quality of this speaker is truly unreal. I've talked with the guys at TurtleBox, Saw Dudes by the way. They love the outdoors and are all avid sportsmen. We all love to get outside and enjoy the peaceful nature of the river and woods, but who doesn't like some great music before or after an adventure? This is a product I can truly say does not disappoint. Go ahead and check the guys out at turtleboxaudio.com. This one is going to be huge. So without further ado, here is Art Lindgren.
How's it going, Art?
Pretty good. Yeah. It's good morning.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on here. I've got a little, this master list going of people that I really want to connect with over, I'm planning on, and I've connected with a lot of them, but you're one name that I haven't until now. And I've had a lot of guests and listeners and people that recommend I connect with you. So yeah, we're here to talk about, you've got a bunch of books. So you've got a number of books out there to talk about British Columbia and flies and all sorts of things. We're going to dig into all that, but first just talk about how you first got into fly fishing.
Oh, well, I guess probably in the 1960s, when my wife and I were first married, my neighbor across the hall in the apartment, he fly fished, so he wanted, was looking for a fishing partner. So anyway, he tried to teach me to fly cast, what didn't go too well. So I took a night school course from a guy called Earl Anderson. That was what the only type of a way you could learn, either through a friend or that night school course through Earl. Okay, he did fly casting and fly tying. I took his fly casting course, and then I bought a fly rod, and that would have been in 1965, something like that. I gear fished for a number of years, and then in 1979, I decided I wanted to fly fish for steelhead, and I put down the gear rod and spent that fall fishing the Thompson River and managed to catch my first steelhead on the fly there. And then I took a week holiday and I managed to get into about a half a dozen more on that holiday. So it got me going steelhead fly fishing. And then from 79, I've never done anything else. So, yeah.
That's it. So since 79, and I want to dig into that first steelhead too, that moment, you know, if you remember it, has it been mostly steelhead and you haven't, that's been your focus. Have you dug into other types of fishing or, you know, lakes and all that stuff as well?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, again, British Columbia, we got the Stillwater fisheries that are really well known, and there's a lot more people doing that type of fly fishing, and you know I do that too. Okay, I guess you could catch steelhead 12 months of the year here but you know by wintertime now I don't do very much fishing. I'm getting too old for that kind of stuff.
I hear you. Me too.
You know, I like to I've caught most game fish, and I think there's probably 20 varieties of fish that you can fly fish for in the province here, and I've probably caught most of them. What the only thing I don't think I've caught are bass and pike. So
are you planning any are you planning on getting the pike checked off of your list before too long?
Yeah, I don't know. Again, you got to go up into the northern part of the province to do that. Okay. I do go up there, but it's more for, Hank Brown wrote about a fish he called the Poisson Blue, okay, and that was, he was referring to the grayling, and, about 8 years ago, I decided I wanted to catch one of those, so anyway, I started going up into the north part of the province, close to the Yukon border, not far from Alaska, okay, and I've been fishing for grayling up there just about every summer since, so... So that's another fish that I knocked off the list that I wanted to do. So but grayling and trout and lakes and bull trout in rivers and steelhead and all the five species of salmon. Good. And a lot of variety here. Okay, that you can fish for with a fly. So
that's it. Yeah, a lot of variety and a lot of big fish. There's I want to talk. You mentioned Hague Brown. Obviously a big name out there. I wanted to maybe touch on that a little bit, but take us back to that steelhead, the Thompson River. Do you remember that first steelhead you got and what you were using and stuff like that?
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, it's one of those memories that'll last a lifetime, okay? Because I know I'd fish for a couple of weekends at least, okay? Maybe even 3 weekends up there. I hadn't done anything, and we were getting ready to come home, and we drove past the graveyard run, and it was empty, okay? So I said, well, maybe I'll go down there and try it. It was Sunday afternoon, okay? Got to go home pretty soon. But anyway, I walked over to the lower part of the graveyard run, and I threw my line out there, and something grabbed it, okay? It missed, okay? It didn't get, and I didn't see any boil or anything like that. But again, I was using a floating line and a Doc Spratley steelhead pattern, okay? Anyway, the next cast, it same place. I went out there and the fish grabbed it, and it was a 34 inch female fish that I don't know how long it took me to land, but it was on a 7 weight a fem fly rod, or a graphite.
Oh, graphite.
So anyway, that was the first one, and
that's right. Yeah. And the Fenwick, that was back in the late 70s and 80s, right? The Fenwick was the probably one of the go-to rods.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But a 7 weight was a little light for Thompson River, because, the average fish is, that was probably about an average size fish. But, a 7 weight line is, a 7 weight rod was, again, on the light side. So, but again, it was the only one fly rod I had that, I felt good enough to fish steelhead with. I've got more now since that, but yeah,
it's amazing. Well, there's obviously a ton we could talk about here, dig into your books and things. I think You know, I'd be interested to hear the history is a piece on this podcast I love to cover because I'm trying to connect, you know, people like yourself to the back into the history. Could we dig into a little bit of that on British Columbia maybe? And Haig Brown, too, I know his name will come up along the way. Could we take it back to wherever you want to start? Maybe go back to the beginning of British Columbia and talk about fly fishing and then kind of bring it in to where we are?
British Columbia was a colony of Great Britain, and as was Vancouver Island. They were two separate colonies, and they became one in the 60s, I think.
Oh, wow.
1860s.
Yeah.
And when the British government wanted the Canadian border, U.S. Canada U.S. border surveyed, there was a guy called John Keast Lord who came, and he was the naturalist that was associated with the Boundary Commission. Now, anyway, the first he wrote a book called The Naturalist in British Columbia, and that's where some of the first fly fishing stuff is. Okay, a lot of these colonial administrators were you know, the well-educated people out of Britain, okay, that went to the colonies, and a lot of them fly fish, so they brought this fly fishing with them, okay. So the first fly ever developed was in the Keast Lord's book, okay, and it's called The Red-Shirted Trapper, and that's in my Fly Patterns of British Columbia book that I wrote in 1996. I think I wrote that one. But so that's the roots are British.
Yeah.
Again, British Columbia, British. We had a long history of people coming from Britain, okay, and fly fishers that, you know, had, I guess I put the tradition there of fly fishing for some species of fish, okay, more of the trouts. Steelhead fishing was kind of late coming for a lot of people in probably the 60s and 70s, where it became popular with the formation of some fly fishing clubs and stuff like that. So
yeah, that was 1960s is when steelhead became popular.
Yeah. But fly fishing more so again, but I think it was more through, because there was a few people that wanted to have fly fishing clubs, okay, and you know, summer run steelhead fishing is a lot easier to catch summer runs than it is winter runs on the fly, because, you know, winter runs you have to get down deep for them, they're not that responsive, but you know, summer run fish are pretty active, okay, and they'll come up and take your fly off the surface and stuff like that. So, and on the steelhead, in part, it was probably General Money. He fished with Haig Brown fished with him back in the 30s, okay, when he was writing the Western Angler, and he wanted to have more of a variety. You know, Haig Brown was on the Campbell River, and he fished the Campbell in around that area, but the Campbell didn't have a lot of summer runs, but the Stamp River over on the west coast was a real good summer run stream. And so anyway Haig Brown fished with General Money, and it was General Money that convinced Haig Brown to try winter steelhead fly fishing, okay? And that's detailed in his 1947 edition of The Western Angler. So, and of course, Tommy Brayshaw was another pioneer steelhead fly fisherman that fished the Coquihalla River near Hope, okay? And he had a bunch of Coquihalla series flies that he developed for that river's fish. So, again, the trout fishing in the lakes, there's a number of people, but Bill Nation is one that fished up around the Kamloops Lakes area, and he developed a lot of fly patterns for British Columbia lake fishing. Arthur Bryan Williams, another British guy that came over, he was probably the first game warden in the province. He wrote a number of books, Rod and Creel in British Columbia, that was 1919, and Fishing Game in British Columbia, 1935, and There was one other one. I can't remember the name of it now. But, you know, these are all the roots, okay, that were established. Hayden Brown, Brian Williams, and John Keith Ward. And so there's a number of other ones that I can't quite remember them all.
Yeah. If somebody wanted to dig into that history, do you have a book that somebody could take a look and kind of get the whole background on the history there?
Well, Fly Patterns of British Columbia, which I did in 1996, and we reprinted it with Amato in 2008. And that the 2008 printing was to kind of recognize the 100-year anniversary of the birth of Roderick Hake Brown. Okay, so it's the same book, but with a section on Hake Brown in the beginning of it. On that book, the history is detailed through the flies that were developed over from the 1860s up until about 1980s. Okay, for the interior trout fishing, the coastal trout, the cutthroat trout, salmon, and steelhead. So there's four sections that the book is divided into, and they have all the early patterns and more modern ones up until the 80s. And there's another one book that I did called Famous British Columbia Fly Fishing Waters, and it's those rivers and lakes that were important in the history of the sport. Okay, some of them are not very good anymore because, you know, we've destroyed them with dams and stuff. But other ones are there, like, you know, the Skeena country has got a lot of rivers that they're still fine fishing rivers. A river that's never been altered by dams or, you know, by man. Anyway, that's another good book that has a lot of British Columbia fly fishing history in it.
Gotcha. So, yeah, you can look at just through the fly history, you can follow and track the history of kind of how everything. Yeah.
Yes. No, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, again, I hate Brown. I was so enthusiastic about him. So my first book I ever did was Fly Patterns of Roderick Hake Brown. So that's got, you know, 20 of his flies that he developed for. That are in his books, okay. But so that was a good little project to provides history on him.
Okay, so that's a little snippet on the history there, which is great. You know, there's a couple of things I wanted to dig into here. You mentioned the tops, and there's some rivers. You know, some rivers have had some issues. Some rivers seem to be doing better. But Hake Brown, you know, on him, I didn't want to go too deep because I know you wrote about him. But is he, you know, maybe connect the steelhead, when steelhead started, to the people that were there that got it going up in BC? Who were those people?
Well, again, General Money and Roger Hake Brown and Tommy Brayshaw were the three. By three pioneer steelhead fishermen, and I just did a book on those three to detail their contributions to the sport, and I just did that this past year while the COVID-19 again, because we were restricted in not being able to do a lot of things. So I actually had three books this year that and one of them was on Money and Hake Brown and Brayshaw.
Wow.
Yeah, so I mean, they're all sold now. Okay, I don't have any left.
You actually published a book that's out there now this year.
Yeah, but again, I've sold them all. Okay, there's none left.
so nobody can buy them. You're not going to reprint it or anything.
No, I'm not. Okay, it wasn't a big publication.
Gotcha.
And you know, one of these things I've been doing. Okay, I like fine books myself, so I have a woman that makes limited editions for me. So when I do one of these things, like there was 33 that were quarter leather bound, okay, with a fly mounted in the cover tied by me, and for this Steelhead influenced the book was either had to be a General Money pattern, a Roger K. Brown pattern, or a Tommy Brayshaw pattern. So, but I find edition book out of it, and then I do some soft covers, okay, for people that want to just have the soft cover book.
Yeah.
But once they're done, I did a book on Harry Lemire, okay, three years ago. And, you know, we maybe printed 600 copies of it. But again, you know, I had some of Harry's flies, and I did, maybe 25 limited editions of a fly of Harry, and again, a quarter leather bound book, okay, for people that were collectors, okay.
Gotcha. What were the name of the books you put together this last year?
Bob Clay, Bob is a bamboo rod builder up on the Kispiox River.
Yep.
And he's a great steelhead fly fisherman. He guided there. It was a big again book on Bob and his fishing and his bamboo rod building. And then Steelhead Influences of the Monty Hague Brown Brayshaw book. And the one I'm just finished is called Sid Glasso, Master for an Innovative Fly Fisher. Yep. Glasso was a teacher that lived on the Olympic Peninsula, and he developed a lot of well-tied, beautiful flies, okay, for fishing steelhead on the Olympic Peninsula rivers. And so I've actually that book is at the printers right now, and I expect them here on this Friday by my the print job. So
gotcha.
He had a big influence on a lot of tires, especially in the past 30 years. But two of the guys in my fly fishing club. I'm in the Totem Fly Fishers of British Columbia. They knew Glasso back in the 70s. And one of them, who I fished with for close to 25 years, he was intrigued with how Glasso tied flies. So anyway, he got a bunch of flies from Sid, but he also went down to Sid's place and watched him tie flies.
Hmm.
So he could copy that technique. This book has got some of that guy's flies in it, plus a number of Glasso's flies, because Glasso was very generous, okay, with giving flies to people that were interested. He didn't sell them, as far as I know.
No.
But so anyway, my chum that I fished with for 25 years, he had this set of flies that he had in a frame, but he had them mounted with magnets, so I could take them off, okay, and so over that 20-something year period, I photographed them at least three times, okay, with different backgrounds and stuff like that. So that's the basis for the Glasso book, is these fly collections that these two Totem Fly Fishers had. And then there's fellows that were influenced by Glasso, and they're in that Pacific Northwest Atlantic Salmon Fly Guild, okay,
yep.
Gary Anderson and Daryl Thompson and Sean Dahlquist, or all from Washington State, so they were very generous when I wanted a few flies. They contributed flies to the book, so with what they gave me and what I had from Glasso, there's about 50 flies that are featured in the book.
Okay, in that book.
Yeah.
And I actually had, a while back, Dave McNeese was on. I think he's writing a book on Sid as well, and
he's going to do the big one, okay.
That whole and obviously we're not far away, the Washington, Oregon to, you know, it's separated by its two countries, but it's almost the steelheaders overlap, right? They fish each other's water.
Well, again, my people from Washington especially, and you know, that connection is really strong between BC and Washington.
Yeah.
There's people that go down there to fish, and But, you know, a lot of people come up here to fish for, you know, the steelhead, yeah. But also for the trout fishing that's available in the lakes and
the
stuff like that. So,
the Kamloops, yeah.
So, yeah, what I call this Sid Glasso book, it's Sid Glasso, an influential, innovative master fly tier and his Canadian connections, because, you know, like the fly connection Glasso is from my friends, okay, that were friends with Glasso. So, it's turned out quite well. I'm very pleased with this book, okay.
And is that book now, so that's one of the three books that you actually wrote and published, and you're publishing this year, is that correct?
Yep.
Why on those books? I wanted to touch, I want to touch a little more on those books, but you just kind of, you know, when you're talking about the Washington, BC overlap, I mean, I know a lot of people come up to fish the north, you know, rivers up in BC. Have you gotten down to like Washington or Oregon or any of the kind of the northwest and fish for steelhead?
Yeah. I fished with Frank Amato. Okay, Frank.
Frank
Moore? I did nine books. No, Amato.
Okay.
Publication.
Yeah.
I did nine books with Frank. Okay, so.
Oh yeah, Amato. Yeah, your motto. Yeah, Amato. Right. Gotcha.
Yeah. So, you know, I did. I did the three river journals with them, but, you know, Fly Patterns of Roger K. Brown and Fly Patterns of British Columbia. So they're all done by Frank. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So. But he's not doing books now, so I've had these ideas that I wanted to do. So I've started, and one of the things too that for Pacific Northwest, Western Washington University down in Bellingham, I've had an oral history program where they've been having interview people, okay, so that fly fishing history is recorded in those interviews and transcripts. So that's the when I wanted to do that Harry Lemire book. That's the basics for it. Okay, was the interview that they did on Harry, and again Bill McMillan too. I did a book on Bill there 2 years ago, I guess. Same thing, okay, with the oral history program. But Bill was alive, so I could talk to him on stuff that I wanted to put in the book where Harry had already passed away. So,
That's cool. That oral history thing, I wanted to touch on that because I think I know what you're talking about. I think I've seen a lot of the people you're talking about I've had on this podcast. We're approaching 200 episodes, so I think... you know, you're a person that fits well with, we've got a bunch of episodes on steelhead fishing as well, but so that oral history, so who, now, is that something that there's actually an interview that you've done, or is there more content? I'm thinking if somebody wanted to dig into that, could they go down to Western Washington and find that?
Oh, yes. No, they have those interviews available through their website now. You know, I can't remember just exactly how to get into it.
I'll put a link in the show notes to make sure we can connect to that. I just want to make sure some of the stuff we don't touch on today, which we probably won't cover at all, that we can kind of follow up. And Frank Moore, you mentioned I interviewed him a while back, and we talked about a lot of the background and Deschutes. Back to the river. So down here, have you fished a bunch of rivers or just a couple of rivers kind of in the
U.S.? No, I fished the, I think three in Oregon.
Uh-huh.
And that's the Deschutes and John Day. And I can't remember, it's one of the coastal rivers I fished with Frank. And
oh, cool.
Then I haven't fished a lot of Washington's, a few down in, Amato's got, a place down in near the
The coast,
Los Columbia. Okay, and I fished some rivers down there with him. Over the years, but most of my steelhead fishing has been in BC. I'm at 56 rivers. Okay, for steelhead fishing, and that's one of the things I'm trying to get to 60 before I pack it in. So I've got a few things lined up this year to try and get me up there to to that 60 rivers.
There you go.
Yeah, so there's not many people who can say something like that, that they've fished that many rivers. Okay. Yeah. So
no, that's true. Yeah. That's a lot. I'm trying to think. I don't think I'm there yet. You mentioned the Deschutes. We talk occasionally about the Deschutes. We've had some really good episodes on it, but, so if you think of the Deschutes from what you remember, what would be is there a comparable river up in BC that is similar to the Deschutes?
Probably maybe the Dean is.
Oh, the Dean, yeah.
Yeah. I think, again, it's summer run fishery, yeah. And it's about the same. Maybe the Deschutes is a little bit bigger than the Dean,
yeah.
but.
Let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. Turtlebox is the loudest, truly portable, waterproof Bluetooth speaker available. Perfect for a skiff, drift boat, or your craft of choice. The guys at Turtlebox believe in respecting the peace and beauty while on the water, but listening to great tunes before or after can be amazing. I remember our last big river trip this summer, and it was cool to break out the Bluetooth speaker as we listened to some classic music and tried to play along with our guitars. Without a Bluetooth speaker, we would have missed a bunch of amazing opportunities and some good laughs. The features I love most on this one are the quality bulletproof frame, easy to push and lighted buttons, and at home you can add another speaker for stereo. To be honest, I've been using this speaker quite a bit around the home, and the dance party with the kids has been great. Find out why Turtlebox is our go-to speaker and why it is great for the river as well. Head over to wetflyswing.com/turtlebox to support a great company, this podcast, and some tunes. And let's keep this podcast going strong and support a great company. Again, head over to wetflyswing.com/turtlebox to get started right now.
Okay, back to the show.
So in those books, I'm curious because, you know, people are listening to this and they're thinking, man, you wrote a book about Bob Clay, you're talking about Sid, all these people. I know it sounds like you did them quick, but, you know, why not produce those like mass, you know, so everybody can read them? Why do the short little things where, because I know there's lots of people that probably be paying.
Yeah, one of the problems with it now, you know, again, like for Frank Amato did a lot of books, but he's not doing them anymore.
So obviously Frank was your man, and when I had Frank on, we talked about a ton of stuff. We talked about a little bit about the Deschutes and just his love of, you know, obviously fishing and and we were actually, the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal was a sponsor for this podcast last year, so we're kind of connected to those guys. And and in fact, here's a story I'll just mention it to you briefly. Just I was on the Deschutes, we dumped a boat in the Deschutes a long time ago. And Frank came up in his little jet sled and picked us up and saved us from the river. But so I've got a little bit of a connection to Frank. But you got this publisher. He's gone. So, I mean, I would imagine there's great publishers that would love to pick up. I'm just throwing that out there because I would love to read the stuff that it sounds like, you know, that you've written. I mean, do you think there's any potential that if we found a good publisher, you could get that? Or do you want to keep it kind of low key?
No, I'm... I'm not against doing something like that. You know, the books are done; they're all formatted. It's
I mean, I just want to throw that out there because we have, you know, this podcast. We have a lot of people that listen, and I, you know, reached out to people on Facebook. You mentioned Facebook. One person, Bruce Kruk, who I interviewed a while back. He's you know Bruce. Well, he mentioned I asked him, you know. I kind of put a shout out on Facebook. I said, hey, I've got Art coming on. And he said, you know, make sure to ask him about the good times of the tea. And I'm, but so that's good to know. I just want to make sure, because I know for me, I would love to read that book. So maybe if we find somebody that can help with, or, you know, connect you with a new publisher, we might have. So I'm going to just throw that out to everybody. So if anybody has ideas, they can reach back out to me or connect with you on it. Cool.
Talking about the tea, okay, one of my books was the Thompson River Journal, so, a lot of good memories, okay, excuse me, on that river, and I did three river journals for the Mato, okay, the Kispiox, the Dean, and the Thompson, so.
Yeah, the Kispiox, the Dean, and the Thompson, and why those three rivers? Because there's Kispiox,
those are the big three, okay, that I think for steelheaders, okay, if you wanted to fish British Columbia, those, you know, those would be the three that you would, you know, the icon fish, I guess, probably is. But again, the Thompson, you can't fish it anymore because, again, it's closed. There's not enough fish there, and the Dean's difficult to get to. But the Kispe Ox is still a good river, and
The Kispe Ox is one that I have a little of experience with. I fished it, I guess, one time, and I fish a lot of the other the rivers up on the Skeena. But the Skeena has a number of different ones. You pick the Kispe Ox, I think it's pretty unique. And in fact, we got skunked that day on the Kispe Ox. But why not the Babeen or the Bulkley? You pick.
It was back in the 50s when the highway system was good enough, okay, that people could start traveling up in there, and it was the Kispe Ox that a lot of them went to. And of course that record fish that was 36 and a half pounds, yeah, okay, came out of the Kispe Ox, and then Mauser's 33 pound fly caught fish was the largest, record steelhead for years. So that's where the history of that started, I guess, probably for steelhead fly fishing up in that area there. The Bulkley and the Maurice were good fisheries too, but they're a lot smaller fish. So So that's
it. Do you know why the Kispe Ox has larger fish? Is it just in general, or are there more people fish? I mean, why are there the big ones coming out? Because I remember, I think a huge fish was caught when we were up there as well.
It's the amount of time they spend in the saltwater feeding. Okay, is one of the reasons that they're, I think they get at least one winter more out there, okay?
Oh, okay?
So they just have a higher, more food, okay, and they grow bigger. So, again, the whole that stuff is in my Kispe Ox River journal.
Oh, good. I'll put a link out to those, all your books. I'm going to put a link out to all your books so people could. And is there one place, like if somebody wanted, I guess they could go to Frank Amato and grab stuff, but, do you have, you're on Facebook, but is that the best place if somebody wanted to look at all your books at one place, just go to Amato?
Well, I'm not even sure whether or not Frank's selling any books now. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, because again, but he might have. Won't be. I don't know. I haven't talked to him for a while now.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm getting right. Well, I'm going to send him one of these glass of books when I get the printing this week. So. Send him a little note too, okay? Because one of these days, I'm still talking about going down and fishing with him again. And we did an interview with Frank for the Western Washington University, and we did it in two parts. And for some reason, the recorder wasn't working on the first half, so we still got to go back down and do that first half with him. Okay, so.
And these interviews again. So now, are you saying, just to clarify, are you actually the interviewer? Are you interviewing these people?
I've done three, I think, with them. But no. There was a fellows that Danny Beatty and. Tamara Belts and I can't remember who else, they did most of them. Okay, I've only been involved in the last few, and it's people that I've known that I thought should have had that history recorded. Okay, Haida Gwaii Rivers since the 60s. And he saw the real heydays of that fly fishing up in that country there. And his biggest fish that he ever caught out of that Yakun was 29 pounds, okay? Which is, a good-sized fish. But, they used to go up there maybe three times a year and fish for steelhead. But, you know, these were sometimes just long weekend trips. And, you know, they'd get 100 fish. And many of them were in the 20-pound range. Well, that fishery needed to be recorded. So anyway, I did him. And then there's one other fellow that's 86 that fished a lot of streams that in his youth, okay, and we did him, and then Frank, we did him. So, but no, I've only done a 3 or 4 those interviews, yeah.
Gotcha. So you've done 3, and I'm interested in it because obviously we're sitting here. I'm a podcaster, so I do audio interviews like we're doing here, obviously. And you know, and in fact, I just heard an interview. I'm a podcasting addict, which is kind of, I joke about that. But you know, podcasting has become this huge thing now. It's the long form interview, right? There's nothing else you can kind of find out there, or not much, right? A lot of the stuff on the news is terrible. It's short snippets, but like here, we're having this conversation with you that's going to be documented for a long time, right? We've got a whole catalog, and I'm doing the same thing. So I'm curious on the thing you're talking about, because it's a skill, right? The audio, the interview, being an interviewer is a skill. How, like, when you go into the interview, how do you prepare, and like, how do you know what questions to ask when you did those?
Well, I know these people quite well. I do a series of questions, okay, and I send it to them so they know what I'm going to ask, and so we go through the questions and just see what they respond, okay. And sometimes, as you're working your way through, something comes up and you need to follow up on that kind of thing. But no, I have to have I couldn't go in there without having something scripted, because my memory's not that good anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
That's right. That's right. No, I hear you. I hear you. It is. And it's funny. And I've just talked about that, you know, Larry King, obviously, who I think just passed away recently.
Yeah, he did.
I heard him on an interview. He was on the, he's been on a bunch, but he was interviewed by Mark Maron. And, you know, a couple of things he talked about there was how he really loved going into an interview, you know, just on the fly. And he felt like that was one of his skills. And I, as I do mine, you know, like today, I had some questions to ask you, but I feel like the best interviews I do are the ones where I don't even look at my questions, where we just start talking and having a conversation. And it's whatever interests me, I start digging into it. You know, today I feel like it's been going pretty well because you obviously have a lot of knowledge. So I don't know. I just want to throw that out there because I think it's really a passion of mine is the interview and getting better at it. And I love that you've done some of those.
Yeah. Well, my minds are always difficult because, again, I'm very good public speaker or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah,
but, you know, fishing, you know, it's been such a big part of my life that I remember, I've done, I'm sitting here in a room here. It's just covered in the wall with fish pictures and flies. And, you know, my library here is right in front of me. It's all fishing stuff. Okay. And I got my tying rooms sitting right next to me, where I'm, you know, been, actually started back tying some flies because I had that, you know, arthritic wrist. I had a bone taken out of it in November. And, I had a cast for 2 weeks and then a splint on for another 6 weeks, and just going through physio right now. But I've started to tie flies again. So, So, you know, I have my little space down here that I got 3 rooms that are all fly fishing related stuff. Okay. And I spend most of my life down here if I'm not out fishing. So, yeah.
That's right. Do you remember a time back in your life where, you know, I asked this because I've seen this with my dad. He was a big fish, you know, he is a big fisherman. It's been his life. But I remember a time a few years back where he slowed down, you know, where like he was always the guy going, and then eventually I became the one that was taking him out. Do you remember?
When I hit 70, I started to slow down a little bit. And I really like fishing, but.
Yep.
You know, I just as rather, you know, I had a place. I like to hike and being out there longer, the river or even on a lake, you know. With this COVID stuff this year, all our we were very restricted on where we could go and what we could do. They didn't open our provincial campsites, okay. until the summertime when the school was out, because again, families did want to try and get out. But again, I couldn't go to some of the places I wouldn't normally have gone. But I had a friend that has, you know, half section of land up in the interior there, and he has a lake on it that we've been putting fish in for, you know, 40 years. So anyway, I could go there, okay, which I did quite a few times through April, May, and June. And it's private. I didn't have to worry about, you know, contacting people with you know, COVID. And so I had some good trout fishing up there. But this year, during this, you know, this pandemic thing that's going on. So, that wasn't the point I was trying to make.
No, that's great. Hey, I did want to take it really quickly to the general practitioner, James Millard, who's a big, you know, he's a friend of mine out there. And he said, I told him you were coming on. He said, ask him about the affection for the general practitioner. Can you talk about that fly and why that's such a big fly for you?
I guess, when I started fly fishing, it was, one of the flies that, it appealed to me. Okay. And, my friend that had these Sid Glasso flies, he's the guy that bought the GPs from Great Britain, okay? Probably the first ones to come into British Columbia. Again, wow. I fished with this guy, okay? So, you know, he was a GP enthusiast. But, again, that's an orange fly, and, it works really, really well. But then I thought, well, through my reading, okay, I got hooked on darker flies, and I'm going to try tying up a black general practitioner. Mm-hmm. And I did a few I put them in my box, and I was over in Roderick Brown's River in the Campbell, okay, and I decided to put this thing on, and swung it through one of the runs that he talks about in his books, okay, and I'm actually looking at that fly. It's hanging up on my wall right now, the first fish I ever caught on a black GP, and it was out of Hague Brown's River. So there's a strong connection, and that fly, okay, I got so enamored with it. I've caught fish now out of close to 80 different bodies of water.
If you had to pick one fly, is the general practitioner your go-to fly?
Yeah. But the black one, okay. And then I did a purple one too. So those are the three. And I simplified the dressing a little bit. And but I think the GPs in my fly patterns, a BC book, and
okay.
Well, for simplified patterns are in the contemporary fly patterns of British Columbia, which I did with Frank Amato. So.
That's right. Yeah, and I'll link out to those as well. And so in Hague Brown, just want to dig into this, back to him really quick. For him, obviously he influenced a lot of people. I mean, is there anything specific that you think of his name that he taught you about anything in fly fishing or just life, I guess?
Yeah, well, again, I kind of look at him as a father of conservation too, okay?
So yep.
The ethics of being a sportsman or fly fisherman, my basis for my philosophy came out of reading his stuff, okay? I never met him, but I had the next best thing because Rod's best friend was Van Egan, okay? And 1981, I met Van for the first time, and we became best of friends. And, I got to go to all these places that Rod wrote about, and Van showed Van, okay, because Van had 20 years, I guess, of living next to Hague Brown. Anyway, the next best thing was getting to know Van, because he and I got to go to these different places, the Hague Brown fish that's up in the Nimkish and Wash River and, you know, the Campbell and Cole and all those places. So,
Is there anybody anybody that, you know, influenced, I mean, you've written, I think, maybe you could clarify how many books you've written, but that influenced your writing?
20 that are,
20?
20 that are. Yes.
Wow. So 20. So yeah, more than I was thinking. I
mean, but some of them I've done for the club. Okay. Like the Tuna Fly Fishers, when we had 40 seasons on the Dee River, the president at that time asked me if I'd do a talk on the club's history there. So anyway, I put together this talk, okay, from 4 years of pictures and stuff like that. So after I did the talk, I was looking at all this material that I put together, and I said, well, the club can do a book out on it. So again, we did a book called Totem Fly Fishers, 40 Seasons on the Dee River. And then I did my own book on my 30 seasons on the Dee. I actually spent 33 there, but I did my book on 30 seasons on the Dee.
Wow. Yeah. No, the books, I think I was just going to say you've written, you know, 20 books, which is, amazing. And this came from, I think, Jerry Kustich in the Facebook group also mentioned he wanted to ask you about, you know, and this comes my question, where do you get the energy to write all these books, you know, because that's a lot of work. Why do you do it, and where's the energy come from?
Well, again, I like the history of the sport, and you know, these rivers that like the Dean, the Thompson, and the Kispiox, they're all dear to me. Okay, and there is stuff I wanted to put down on paper, and it gives me something to do in my off fishing time too. Okay, I don't like to just sit around, and I certainly don't want to be watching television during the day and stuff like that. So if I'm not out there in the river doing something, putting these things together gives me something to do. And, if I have to tie flies for them too, okay, well, I can do that. And, another one, like when the Totem Fly Fisher became 50 years old, the club, I thought, well, we could do a book on that club history. So I came up with the thing, well, maybe 50 years, 50 flies. And I asked guys to, if they had any important fly patterns that, they wanted. But, it's a nice little book, but we didn't do a heck of a lot because it's a club book. Okay. But that's one of the ones there that I count as one of my books, because it was my idea and I put most of it together. So,
Gotcha. Yeah. I love the history as well. That's part of the reason I do this podcast, trying to, you know, for people that are maybe not even fly fishing yet, you know, eventually they'll learn, they'll listen to this and they'll be like, oh, they might not even have known you or even maybe Roger Keg Brown, but through this show, they might learn a little bit of the history and have a connection. So I appreciate your effort, that you're able to do that. So, and then your writing style, did you have mentors? Like, how'd you become a writer?
A struggle. When I did fly patterns of British Columbia, one of my friends was a English teacher. And he did a lot of editing and stuff like that. But no, Haig Brown was a writer that fished. I'm a fisherman that writes. Okay. And there's quite a difference in the style. You know, I'm not that. I can look at stuff that I did a long time ago. Why didn't I pick that error up? Okay. And having editors and stuff like that that help. Okay. It's just because, again, I like the history of the sport, and there's some historical significance there that I struggle with trying to put the words on a piece of paper. And of course, that's being really a fly cool. tire and not, you know, I tie reasonable flies. Historical stuff is just, that's the reason I wanted to do this. And this is the reason why, we're recording some of these, like Bob Clay, okay, Harry Lemire and Bill McMillan. They're all part of the Pacific Northwest fly fishing history, and to be able to do a book on those guys in this Glasso book, this latest one, I'm providing historical pieces, okay, for the fly fishing community. So
yeah, no, it's awesome, and we haven't even touched on flies. Obviously, I've been very interested just in your background. And you know, I had John Gearock on quite a while ago, and we talked about a lot of his writing and his style. And I think some people wanted to hear more about fishing, right? That's again today. Yeah. We're kind of this thing where we haven't talked a lot about fishing, because for me, just you as, you know, as a writer is pretty interesting, right? The effort you've put your life into doing this is, you know, that's substantial. I feel like myself, right? This podcast, again, I'm trying to make the comparison, but it's a lot of work to produce. You know what I mean? But I do it because I love, I think the same, similar things. Yeah. I love the history. I love fishing. So when you're out there on the water, so you're out there fishing, say for steelhead, are you always thinking about the book and like ideas, or how's that look? The next book?
No. Again, when I'm out there on the water, I'm usually concentrating on what I'm doing, I'm making sure that the fly comes across properly and stuff like that. But it's probably, you know, like, if I'm going to the Skeena country, I've got almost 2 days to drive there. Okay,
all right.
Because there's a lot of thinking time that you can. Okay, because I make a lot of these trips by myself. Okay, and I'll see people up there and stuff like that. But I don't often have somebody sitting there next to me. My wife doesn't fish, so. Yep. I got a bunch of thinking that I can do, okay, and if I'm if I need to do any research, like Bob Clay book, okay, well, I'm going up to Bob Clay's on in the Gisbeox there, and I interview him, and then if I need to have pictures, okay, I'm trying to take them when I do these trips. And so,
Your focus. That's cool. Yeah. Well, now you've got a new thing. If I can get you on the podcast, you can listen to some of our back catalog of our, we've had a lot of, I haven't had, you know, there's a couple of people you mentioned I haven't had on. I've actually had John McMillan on, Bill's son. And we talked about, in fact, I just talked to just John briefly yesterday. I was kind of bummed because he started a podcast last year and he kind of pod faded in he isn't doing it anymore. And I reached out to John and I said, hey, what's the deal, John? Are you done with the podcast? And he's like, yep. He was like, too much work. I got to focus on other things. So just, you know, again, I was bummed because I love the podcasting, but for you, if you ever want to get into it, let me know. I'll show you how to show you how to listen and do the whole thing. But, cool. Well, I did want to touch on flies before we get out of here. We're going to get out of here pretty quick, but you know, you've got all these books. Obviously, a big focus is on flies. So I do this little section called the 222, which is just top two tips, top two flies, top two resources. And maybe we can just bring it out with that and talk about flies. So you mentioned one. We talked about the one fly, the general practitioner. Is there another fly or maybe fly patterns that you are your go-to patterns?
Yeah, I have a book called My Steelhead Flies.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a dozen or so in there that I've used over the years that have been good for me.
That's a book that's published?
Again, it's one of these ones I did. I got a few copies left of it.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Gotcha.
You know, the Doc Spratley and was a really good, and I've got fond memories of it because, again, I got that first steelhead on the Thompson with it. But it's very good trout fly, too, okay? In lakes and carry special flies, another one I have a memory for. Again, a good trout fly. Well, there's probably people who use it for steelhead. I have, but you know, they play fly like the Adams is a dry fly. It's really, really good for trout and good grayling fly. I have another fly I call a little bugger because I tie it on size 14s, but it's like a little of a cross between Roderick Hague's brown black caterpillar and the woolly bugger. Okay, combination of the two flies that and it's a really good trout fly. Okay, mm-hmm. and in lakes and in rivers. So that's another favorite to fly. I have I think you call it woolly bear bomber. Okay, it's a black deer hair spun thing with a brown hackle and black tail. But that's the one I use for skating to fly or waking to fly across for summer in steelhead. I've caught fish in, 15 poverty rivers using that fly. It's my go-to fly for that type of fishing.
You got a bunch, and obviously we've got the books that we'll be able to check out with all your fly patterns. Yeah. So you've covered a little bit of everything. So not just steelhead, you've covered flies for all types of the species, a lot of the species.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we cover that, and then let's just take it to steelhead because I love these tips thing. You know, we haven't talked anything about fishing today, Roy. But if you're on the river, so let's just take us to a river. You're up on the Kispiox, let's say. I was thinking it's Kispiox, but what about the Dean? Some of these other rivers, a lot of people probably haven't fished yet. But what would you give them a tip for steelhead fishing? If you're out there trying to swing up a fish, do you have a tip you might provide for somebody that's listening here to help them get into a fish?
You have to look at the river and look at the flow and the way the structure is, okay? Because I've been with guys on the deep river. They've come all the way up there, and they cast too straight across. Okay, there's more certain distance, but you got to look at the thing, okay? Mostly it's a 45 down, and sometimes it's even less than that, but that you got to concentrate on where you're putting your fly to bring it across that section of water where you think fish are going to be, so it's going at the right speed and not racing across in a big bend if
that's a great tip.
Again, it's reading the water correctly.
That's a great tip. No, I think a lot of people do get stuck in that are new. They're like, yep, just swing it. And they're not really thinking about how that fly is moving in the water.
Yeah.
So do you have maybe one more? It could be anything that comes to mind just as far as, so let's say we're in the water, we're swinging. Now I've got, say, a little bucket I know where I think a fish is going to be. I'm swinging that fly down over that fish. How else would we make sure to maybe get that fish to come up?
Well, again, sometimes they do come up. Okay. Yeah. And one thing I'm impatient when I'm on a river, especially if I'm drifting. Okay, if I got my water mask, I'm going to cover a lot. I'll spend. I like this woolly bear bomber because when it's coming across, and if fish comes up at it, sometimes they'll come up at it a number of times for that. But I don't want to spend a lot of time because I still got a long ways to go. But changing down, okay, sometimes if you have a size 4 on and the fish rise to a couple of times and they don't actually take it, if you go down a size to a 6 or an 8, often I get it on the next cast.
There you go.
I've given them, a lot of guys that say, I caught a fish on a size 4 fly in this river, and I'm going to use a size 4.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's great. That's an awesome one. Yeah, Art. That's another killer tip. I think, again, people get stuck in the routine, but you should be changing it up. And I think the BC, I always think of the BC as big flies as well. I always think big flies, big fish. I've caught a lot of, not a lot, but I've caught a number of fish in BC up on the Skeena fishing big flies, the biggest flies I've ever fished in my life.
Yeah. Bob Clay, he's been. But he was in the 70s when he came, but he's told me a number of times, and I agree, but he says use the smallest fly that you can possibly get away with, and that's his philosophy.
That's buddy. Amazing.
Okay, so
that's amazing.
So sometimes he's down to size 8 quite often. Okay,
that's amazing. That's
but, it, but,
yeah.
Uh, Yeah, but it's hard. You know, people think, oh, it's a big fish. Okay, I need a big fly. And a lot of times you need a big fly, especially if you're, you know, you're searching. You're, that's what that black general practitioner would be good for me, too, because, again, it was a really good search fly. And I could carry on. I knew I was going to, there's a fish down there. I have a good chance of having a response from it when I'm fishing the sunk line. Okay. Because, again, I didn't have to worry too much about changing changing the fly because it was effective and had a lot of confidence in it. So
that's amazing. Yeah, those are awesome. Yeah. All right. Hey, before we get out here, just one quick one. I want to get on that resource. So you've got a huge resource. You got all these books. We talked a lot of stuff. Is there anything else that's not your own that somebody can learn a little bit about, maybe kind of British Columbia, you know, just fishing in general or steelhead? Are there any other books, magazines, videos, anything you can think of?
No, I can't think of, the Stillwater, Phil Raleigh's wrote book on Stillwater fishing. Brian Chan's had a couple of out only two people I can think of.
And those
right
are
now.
The best. Those are the best. I think that I had Phil on a while back, and he was huge. Obviously, he knows his stuff. And you know, today we're going to leave this one off without talking about Stillwaters. And you know, I'm you know, we have a certain like the time we got to cut it off. So I'm going to let you get out of here, Art. But before I do, I just wanted to check in the next 6 months or so. Do you have any other books that we can expect? You got coming? Anything that the general public we could check out coming up here?
The St. Lasso book right now.
Yeah.
And I've got another idea. I'm not going to.
Okay.
I'm thinking about, but again, it's a lot of fly tying to do it. Okay.
Oh, cool.
So, but but I
awesome.
I'll see you again. It's just I'm be thinking what I'm going to be doing for later this year. So
we can expect, so we can expect there's potentially another book coming out of you maybe in the future.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah.
All right. Or, okay. Hey, well, if they want to find you, I guess just Art Lindgren on Facebook, right? Is the best place.
Yes. That's
This will be great, man. Hey, Art, I appreciate you coming on and sharing today. This has been really great. And you know, if anybody has questions, they can connect with me and all, and you know, and we can connect them to the books you've written and stuff. So, I just want to thank you for all your time today, and hope to keep in touch with you.
Okay, Dave. Yeah, it's gone quickly, so thanks.
So there you go. If you want to find all the show notes, all the links we covered, just go to wetflyswing.com/191. Head over to wetflyswing.com/resources to find out the most recent book recommendation from some of the guests we've had on this podcast. If you if you click over there and connect and buy something through any of those links, this podcast will get a small commission. I want to say thank you in advance if you have a chance to do that. That's at no additional charge to you. And before we get out of here, just want to share a quick summary of the seven books Art has out there. And he's got, I think, another 13 more that, or some that aren't published and things like that. But here's the top, they're the big seven. So I have Irresistible Waters. That was the first one. Number two, Thompson River Journal. Number three, West Coast Steelheader. Number four, Famous British Columbia Fly Fishing Waters. Number five, Dean River Journal. Number six, the Contemporary Fly Patterns. This is Contemporary Fly Patterns of British Columbia. And number seven, Kispiox River Journal. So I think I will put the Famous British Columbia fly fishing waters in the resources page. So you can take a look over there and take a look at that one if you want and see what else we have going. So just want to thank you again for checking out the show today. I definitely appreciate your support. And hope to maybe catch you on the river or online.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.